Hello, trainers, and welcome to the Play Pokemon podcast, your official Pokemon Organized Play podcast. Our show has been covering the finals of the Players' Cup, an online tournament series that happened this summer for Pokemon Tournament DX, the Pokemon Trading Card Game Online, and VGC battles in Pokemon Sword and Shield. My name is Jay Blake, and I'll be your host and resident Pokemaniac for our final episode of Players' Cup coverage. And although it's sad that the tournament series is over, we have some cause for celebration, so celebrate we will. I'll have two ace trainers from each game coming onto the show to talk about some of their favorite moments from the entire tournament series. That's the invitationals all the way through until our grand finals. Also, we won't have one question of the week this week. We're going to have a few. Every single section will have a couple of rapid-fire user-submitted questions for our ace trainers to go over. And then lastly, there's been a bit of an announcement come out recently. So obviously a lot of trainers will be expecting our episodes to go live on Wednesdays. This episode has been posted on a Thursday, and that's because we wanted to make sure we were talking about the biggest news there is. We're getting a Players' Cup too. That's right, towards the end of this year, trainers in the video game and trading card game will get the opportunity to duke it out again in Players' Cup 2. More information on that in each of those game sections, as well as in our YouTube description box. You can find the link to the event hub, as well as in your audio podcast descriptions. You can find the links that you need there as well. So lots to cover on this episode, but I think that's enough from me. Let's go straight to VGC. Roll the music. Going into team preview now for VGC, and we're here with our first ace trainer duo. It's got Kay.
Hello.
And Scott.
Howdy.
And we have some excellent things to talk about this week. Obviously, this is our celebration episode, guys. So I'm really wanting to know what some of your favorite moments are from the Players' Cup. And let's start with just maybe condensing that down to just one moment that really stood out to you. Let's start with Kay on that.
My memorable moment to me was actually on the tournament operations side of things. On the very first day of play, the second day for me of the regional online qualifiers was the Sunday. I had stayed up the entire day through Europe, North America and Latin America. And I'd stayed up till about like 3 a.m. to get the Australia bracket, the Oceania bracket started.
Wow.
And I remember watching the sun come up on the Sunday, chatting to the staff team, watching the tournament run, and I just remember thinking, like, hey, we did it! We ran a day of an online tournament. We've never done this before. And it was such a great moment. I feel like at that point, I knew we'd cleared one of the biggest hurdles. And also, the sunrise was really pretty. Not something that I watch too often. I'm not a morning person. So that would be mine. Sorry, that's not what you wanted. Yeah. You wanted me to talk about like a critical hit or something, didn't you?
Well, I mean, I'm sure we'll get to plenty of those down the line. But yeah, that is a really, really nice way to kind of set the tone here. Obviously, the Players' Cup is a love letter to competitive Pokemon, especially when everyone's playing from home for not just the players, but also for tournament organization staff as well. So fantastic to hear that, obviously, for you being able to go all the way through all the different tournaments and see the sunrise at the end of it and know that something great has happened. It's a really nice image, Kay.
I mean, I should say, I didn't need to stay up for the Oceania bracket. It was in the very capable hands of my colleagues in Seattle and the ESL Australia staff team. But I felt like I just wanted to see it complete, you know?
Sure, that's lovely. Scott, do you have a sunrise story for us, or are you going more down the critical hit route?
Oh, definitely critical hit route. I mean, I think one of the best parts of this tournament for me is that I got to enjoy the whole thing from my couch. Little less effort than our, star of the year tournaments normally are for me. I think my favorite moment was in the match between Jusak Lee and Chris Kahn. I feel like whenever we see strategies, especially the Iron Defense Ferrothorn sort of thing, I'm like, oh man, why don't we see more defensive stat boosts? And then I remember quickly, which is exactly what happened in that match, right? Where it's like,
the
oh
universe
my gosh.
Reminds you.
Yeah, it's going to 4v1. It's coming. It's got the iron defense boost. Urshifu's going to knock itself out on iron barbs. Like, it's going to do it. And then, of course, immediately gets critical hit. The game flips the other way. Twitch chat is quite put out. It is the quintessential defensive stat boost game. Not necessarily what you want to see as far as like the tactical chess game element of Pokemon VGC, but definitely a memorable moment and something that reminds us, I guess, why, especially in the, at least with Double Elim, you have a little bit more ground to play with, but why defensive stat boosts are not that common in VGC.
Yeah, an absolutely huge womp womp moment there, unfortunately. But obviously, Ferrothorn did prove itself to be very, very powerful in the final parts of the tournament. And I think it's going to be powerful even moving beyond the Players' Cup, but more to that later on. The two moments I want to talk about, and they are very much the same concept, but applied
in
different
ways.
Why
do you get two
moments? They're the same thing, Kay. They
are side privileges.
Okay. They are side will-o-wisps, okay?
Okay.
And side will-o-wisps they're talking about. So obviously in the Invitational, we saw that Eduardo Cunha did this amazing side will-o-wisp onto his drowsy Togekiss had been hit with a yawn from a Snorlax on Graham Amadee's side, and it kind of set Twitch chat alight, and everyone was loving it. And it was such a brilliant play to be able to win the game. If Togekiss had fallen asleep at that point, it would have stopped all his Dynamax damage. Really, really great insight. And there was also that incredible play from Antonio Sanchez Savan up against Guillermo Castilla in round 11 of the online regional qualifiers. And that was the turn one switching Gastrodon side Will-O-Wisp from an Arcanine. And Gastrodon just won the game from that point onwards. And both of them apply 4D chess kind of thinking, especially just to be able to close out the opponent's options and stop really powerful sleep strategies from working. I thought that was so, so cool.
I thought it was pretty cool too, in particular, where, I mean, I think in the past, you know, we've seen kind of Will-O-Wisp teams where like, the plan is to hit your partner, right? So you're kind of looking for it. I thought it was particularly cool in that case because it just wasn't the point of either of those teams, right? Just like, oh, you know, this is technically an option I have. Why not?
Yeah, just a really interesting way of viewing the game and understanding where your outs lie. And I think both of them proved themselves fantastically in both sets of the tournament and also in those particular moments. All right, next question for you. And this is a really hard one for me to think about as well, but what's your favorite team from the entire tournament? Obviously from the Invitationals all the way through to the Grand Finals. Scott, do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I actually really like Chris Kahn's team. Not to double up on the same player with two questions in a row.
Yeah.
I just tend to like watching him a lot because he picks a lot of teams that I wouldn't play just because they're kind of far out of what my comfort zone as a player is. I thought watching Alolan Ninetales in particular was really fun, where
yeah.
I think even in the formats where it was really good, it's just never a Pokemon I've had any success with. So it's the sort of thing I like to watch other players use. And then on top of that, he did have some other things I thought were pretty fun. You know, we mentioned Ferrothorn already, and you know, jokes aside about it getting crit, I thought it was a really clever pick for the tournament, where there's a lot of fun stuff there, I thought.
Yeah, yeah. I think the Assault Vest Primarina that Chris Kahn was using during the online regional qualifiers as well was super, super nice. He's a player that's proved himself very, very well in terms of both the team building aspect and the actual in-battle mode. So definitely a fantastic player, and the team building there on display has been phenomenal. Kay, how about you? What are you thinking?
So I think completely the opposite to Scott. My favorite would probably be a team that I would want to play. I am a prankster fiend. Every team I've ever enjoyed running has had prankster on it somewhere. I'm terrible. So I love Antonio Sanchez Savan's team. I mean, it's partly because in the Invitational, we saw Graham run Dracozolt, and I saw him with his little grabby hands, and I thought, I want Dracozolt to do well. So I was really happy to see it in the finals. That aside, you know, he's got some big stompy damage. That's pretty good. But in particular, Grimmsnarl with Prankster. And I like the qualifiers version of the team that Antonio ran. So he actually changed his team very slightly from the qualifiers to the finals, in that he swapped out Rillaboom for Amoongus.
Mm.
Now, this is probably a really sensible idea. Like, Amoongus, like, it improves your Togekiss matchup. I think you were talking to him as well, Jay, and you said that it also helped with the Rotom matchup.
Yeah.
It's a good idea, but Rillaboom has that priority, and it would just make me much happier. So I would be running the Rillaboom version of the team.
Gotta go fast, basically.
Gotta go fast.
That's the answer here.
Rillaboom goes zoom.
It was such an interesting team, and I think an option that a lot of players weren't expecting in the online regional qualifiers and in the finals. And it's amazing to see that such a bulky and defensive team was able to make it through that such long gauntlet for the online regional qualifiers, and only with a minimal change go into the finals and perform really well. So congratulations to Antonio there. My team that I think I prefer is going to scale back all the way to the Invitational, and the runner-up team from Alex Gomez, that G-Max Lapras Whimsicott. Sorry, that's I wonder why.
Sorry,
I chose
Jay,
that one.
Do you like Whimsicott by any chance? You've never mentioned that before.
Yeah,
sorry.
I'm sorry. Look, I'm sticking to type, okay? But that's
all right.
Combination...
Scott didn't mention a rain team. You can mention a Whimsicott team.
I'm sure he's going to mention a rain team later. but yeah, the Gigantamax Lapras and Whimsicott plus the Dusclops and Conkeldurr, that team with also having Dracovish in the back and Incineroar, it looked on paper like you knew what it was going to do, but just completely inverted that when it actually came out on the field. You had the Life Orb on Lapras plus Fake Tears from Whimsicott to really start to pressure massive damage from the get-go whilst also boosting your defenses with Aurora Veil from G-Max Resonance. And then with Dusclops, things were tricky there too. You had Trick Room to boost your, or to change the speed order for your own team, but you also had Imprison to deny Trick Room for other teams which are more focused around it. I thought it was just so clever and so unique. A really, really interesting take on a team archetype that a lot of people might have expected, but just done in a different way. But moving away from teams now, let's talk about our favorite matches. And Kay, what was your favorite match to watch from the entirety of the Players' Cup?
Oh my goodness, there's so much of it. I think one that really stood out for me was in the Europe online qualifier in the losers bracket, Eric Rioch versus Javier Señoreña. In a Spain showdown. It was pretty evenly matched most of the time. There were some good mind games going on there. But there was this beautiful moment where Porygon Z had been was Dynamax and had been using these max strikes. And then Javier's Cinderace used base bounce to hop over one of them and stall out the last turn of the Dynamax. This is one of those strategies that I've tried myself like in battle so many times, and it never ever pays off. So to see it actually executed, like it made me so happy. So many things these days run bounce or fly, these two turn flying type moves for the max airstream, and we don't usually see the base move. We saw bounce twice in this set from Cinderace. There was also this beautiful little dance going on between Javier's Tyranitar and Eric's Porygon Z and Incineroar, where the Tyranitar was continually dragon dancing and the Porygon Z was continually max striking to drop the speed, and the Incineroar was switching in to drop its attack. And it was just this battle of who could get the Tyranitar's stats one way or the other.
Yeah, fantastic, fantastic game. And as you mentioned, just so complicated in terms of the field positioning and just trying to deny Tyranitar from doing what it wanted, and what it wanted it was dancing.
He just wanted to dance.
The fever
of
dance.
How could anyone deny him this?
Exactly, exactly. Fantastic. And obviously, as you mentioned about the bounce, brilliant application to be able to use those two-turn strategies just to stop yourself from taking too much damage, and also the speed debuff as well. Lots of interesting things going on there. Scott, how about you? What was your favorite match to watch in the Players' Cup?
Well, to maybe continue a theme of situations where the spectators and I are going to disagree, I really like the match between Antonio Servan and Giovanni Polanco. I'm going to imagine for a lot of spectators that the pacing of the match was a little slow. We had this really long defensive match. I'm not sure if this is just me not being able to eject the legacy of being a gold-silver competitive player out of my veins or not, but I thought it was really fun just because it was two teams matching up that like really didn't seem like they should be playing the slow-paced match they were playing, where on one side, we've got the Drapion, where we remember for being that goofy, like sort of offensive oriented pick. And then the other side, you've also got Dracozolt, right? So it's Pokemon that you're probably expecting, like, oh, we're going to go out there, we're going to give it everything we got in turn one or two, and then we're going to win or lose. I just thought it was a really interesting kind of window into how you get to this point in a tournament playing teams like that, right? Where, well, you can't just go ham on turn one all the time or just play every game really aggressively. And I thought it was kind of fun to see two teams that maybe weren't designed to play super slowly kind of have to position waiting for the perfect moment for so long.
Yeah, especially when they've got two massive options for damage dealing like Dracozolt and Drapion. Obviously, like, we know that Antonio's team had those light screen and reflect options to be able to boost the defense, and had the win conditions in Corviknight and Gastrodon to go for. So a little bit more slow paced around those elements. But when you've got such a cannon like Dracozolt alongside it, and Drapion and its hard Trick Room team with Lilligant and Torkoal alongside it as well. Definitely lots of go button offense that you want to press, but having to board position, it just shows the caliber of these players when it comes down to it, right?
Yeah, yeah. Famous style Pokemon, Lilligant and Torkoal.
Of course. Yeah, of course. Put them up there with Blissey, eh? My favorite match that I want to talk about is definitely from finals, and it's Davide Cogneta against Joseph Ugarte. And it was just incredible. We mentioned it on the podcast, Scott, you and I, and I thought the positioning play from both of these two players was just such a high caliber. They were both actively making reads and making decisions based on how the other player was playing, and that looks unorthodox when you think about it in terms of where damage is going, but expecting players to switch certain Pokemon out and into certain options allowed for these plays to come off, or inversely, seeing that someone is expecting something to happen and then doing completely the opposite is also such a high level thinking about this game. I think both of them really proved their worth in that set. Fantastic stuff. And that's not even mentioning the crazy Dynamax Amoongus and Dynamax Porygon 2. Fantastic
stuff. I was
going to
say, of all, like, those two are obviously very, like, highly ranked, well-known, highly ranked players. That, well, like, we both know that they're very talented, but really the best thing about that match was like the Dynamax choices.
Yeah, in a kaiju battle of Dynamax Pokemon, these are not the ones that you're expecting, right? So thank you so much, Kay and Scott, for talking us through some of your favorite moments from this Players Cup. But obviously, this is not the end of Video Game Championship battles. There is a slight change now. We've gone from Series 5 through to Series 6, and that has changed the rule set that players will be playing with. There's been some significant Pokemon that have been removed and taken out of the metagame, and this is going to cause some team-building challenges and a whole new level of excitement for trainers trying to get through and battle in this series. I was wondering, Scott, what you were thinking about Series 6, and if there's anything that you'd like to try now that certain Pokemon have been banned.
I mean, I'm pretty excited to try it out. You know, just something a little bit wonkier where we've been playing variants of the same format for so long, it should be fun. I mean, you know, I guess, you know, especially because we teased it before, I've got to shed it out, you know. Surely this time Rain will be useful, right? You know, if we just keep removing enough Pokemon that are better than Rain, eventually Rain has to be okay, right?
True.
But it's
true.
Actually really... It's really not what I'm most excited for. I want to back off that one. I just think what's great to me about this is, I guess, like Rain, unfortunately, there's a lot of Pokemon that like maybe get a little bit overpowered. You know, without Pokemon like Incineroar and Rillaboom, and even stuff like, you know, Dragapult, I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, can we make stuff like Clotsur work? Obviously, Rillaboom being gone isn't great for it, but I think it'd be fun to kind of like, you know, mess around with offensive Pokemon that maybe weren't the marquee offensive Pokemon before. And then I'm also kind of just excited to see how some Pokemon whose like their best counters are removed, you know, how good will Delmize be now that Torkoal's gone? How good will Gastrodon be now that Rillaboom's gone? I think it should be a lot of fun.
There's going to be so many different Pokemon that can rise out of obscurity from this, especially as you mentioned, seeing as such of the big damage dealers, and also some of the glue Pokemon that really structured and held together teams have been removed from the format. For me personally, I think I'm really interested to see where some of the staple archetypes are going to shift towards. As Scott mentioned before, with Tyranitar out of the picture, that means that Rain has an opportunity to be the dominant weather. With Sun gone as well, this means that Politoed and its best friend in Kingdra has an opportunity to be able to wreak some havoc here. And there's lots of other different staple ideas that are moving on away as well. Like Indeedee in its female form is going away. So that was the premier redirection user for the most part outside of Togekiss. And both of them are out of the format now. And Amoongus just so happens to have appeared at the right time to avoid being banned, but is probably likely to be one of the highest priority Pokemon for people looking to get a bit more defensive glue in their teams. Also Clefairy, which we saw in the finals as well. So I think there's lots of different changes that I'm interested to see how it plays out. And especially a lot of the terrain users, the best terrain users in Rillaboom and in Indeedee are gone. And that might clear up a little bit of space for something more offensive, like Alolan Raichu and Pinkurchin, like where you have your Surge Surfer ability doubling Raichu's speed, and you've got Rising Voltage to do insane amounts of damage in electric terrain. That might be an interesting thing to try. Also, Pokemon like Dracozolt and Durant come back in a really strong way. They've performed really, really well in earlier series in this season of VGC. And I'm sure that players are going to be trying them out as well. I think it's going to be a really interesting thing. Lots of really high offense options, as well as some more defensive options being able to creep back in.
Man, I'm so happy that Indeedee's gone. As I say, priority's my jam. Love priority. And Indeedee was always there laughing at me in team preview, like, hello.
Hello.
I don't think so. So good riddance, frankly. I'm really excited to see what everyone comes up with. Like, were they the new offense options, defense options, these new support Pokemon that might come into it? I love Ferrothorn. We've mentioned Ferrothorn a few times throughout this, especially in a world where Amoongus is sitting there at the top. Amoongus can't touch Ferrothorn. Just sits there laughing at it and body pressing some more. I'm probably going to be like looking forward to using Ferrothorn quite a bit. Lee Provost also showed off Comfey, Goodra, and Gigantamax Lapras Core, which looks fun. It's kind of a twist on the team that we saw Brendan Zeng using in the Players' Cup, with a stumpy physical Goodra in it as well. I'm looking forward to that. The idea is you have Comfey and Gigantamax Lapras with weakness policy. So you Giga Drain your Lapras to set off the weakness policy while also using G-Max Resonance to boost your defenses all in the same turn.
Sounds like you got stats coming up everywhere.
Stats for days.
And yeah, obviously, trainers at home, try out lots of different Pokemon combinations on Battle Stadium for Series 6. It's going to be a blast to see where the creativity comes from now that certain Pokemon have been removed from Series 5. But also, trainers, we would love to be able to talk to you about a new announcement that has come out this morning. There's going to be a Players' Cup 2.
We're doing it again!
Scott, Players' Cup 2! We're doing it again. Exactly. I'm so excited that players around the world will be able to be given the opportunity to battle in a tournament like this once again. And we've got a few details that we can share with the VGC players at home to be able to help them register. Isn't that right, Kay?
Yes, we do indeed. So the structure is going to be very similar to Players Cup 1. The really, really key thing that players who are listening to this podcast should do is, if they would like to participate, they need to be ready to play in the online tournament that'll act as the pre-qualifier from the 24th to the 27th of September. That's in a few weeks' time. Now, to do this, there are some steps you have to take. You must have a player ID. You must be opted into the Play Pokemon terms and conditions. And you must have linked your Nintendo Switch Online account to the Trainer Club account with the player ID. There's instructions on how to do this on Pokemon.com in the Trainer Club profile section. It's super important you do all of those things. Also, make sure your email address is up to date, because if you qualify, we will be emailing you to tell you that you qualified. So now is a really good time to check that.
Yes, yes. Please do it right now. Very, very
right
important.
Right now. Well, finish the episode and then right now.
Obviously, this tournament will be the pre-qualifier, and that means that will determine how many players make it through to the next section of the tournament, right?
So similar to Players Cup 1, the top 256 eligible players from the North America, Latin America, and Europe regions, and the top 128 from the Oceania region will qualify for the region online qualifiers, which will take place in November.
Fantastic stuff. And obviously, as we saw with Player Cup 1, when players have played through this section of the pre-qualifier, they go into the online regional qualifiers, and from there, play down until we get to our finals once again. This time we'll be having four players from each region, including Oceania, playing and duking it out to decide who will be the second ever Players' Cup champion. Obviously, as Kay mentioned, there is a lot of more information to be gained by going onto pokemon.com/play. Use the YouTube description below or your podcast descriptions to find those links. And finally, Ace Trainers, just some quick fire, rapid question of the week style questions for you that some of our users have submitted. Let's start with one from at DaltonBW21. If you were a gym leader, what type would you specialize in and what would your ace be? Let's go, Scott.
I'm gonna go with a twist on this. I think that I would actually specialize in let's go with ground type Pokemon. I feel like as the rain guy, I feel like if you're coming to my gym, you should bring either electric or grass, right? So I got a 50-50 if I'm gonna hit this right. So I'm gonna go with ground. I'm gonna counter all of your rain counters. My gym's still gonna be rain themed. Like, yeah, I'm gonna have just like a sprinklers going off everywhere, but it's all gonna be a bait.
There's gonna be lots of Gastrodon playing in the mud.
Yeah, and Seismitoad.
No, not Seismitoad.
Yeah, not those specifically, because I want them to bring the electric types. So it's all going to be Pokemon who are weak to electric type attacks will be the ambience.
Okay. Well, Kay, what about you?
I would have a gym full of bugs, just a shrine to bugs. I would have a Volcarona as my ace. I'd have a Galisopod in the back. Shout out to DC.
Lovely stuff. And yeah, I think quite thematic with your nameplate Pokemon there, Kay. Next question, and it comes from at Joshua Yale, and it's, if you could take a vacation to one region in the Pokemon world, where would you go and why?
I mean, lockdown has been rubbish, so I'm kind of tempted to say Gala, because I'd really like to go out and see some rolling hills. Probably be Johto. Johto has always been really beautiful. When I was little, I used to pretend that I lived in Ilex Forest in a treehouse, and I would chase Celebi around the forest. It was the garden. It wasn't a real forest. I would go to Ekrateek and see the cool towers, and yeah, it would definitely be Johto. It's always had my heart.
Well, that sounds delightful. How about you, Scott?
You know, I hate giving what I feel like is the most obvious answer here, but I'm going to go Alola. I never really understood the concept of like tropical vacations when I was younger. But the older and more stressed I get, the more of it seems pretty rad. probably too lazy for gym challenges anyway. It's like, yeah, let's hang out, get some snacks, go to that mall.
Some Malasadas.
Yeah, let's get some Malasadas in here. That sounds great. Have a bit of a lie down, sit in the sun, lay by a pool. Just generally have a great time. That sounds awesome to me. Okay, Ace Trainers and trainers at home, this has been our final part for the Video Game Championships. We've really enjoyed talking to everyone about the Players' Cup. And Kay and Scott, thank you so much for giving us your time and all your awesome opinions over the past few weeks.
I've never been told my opinions are awesome before, Jay. I'm going to write that one down. Thank you.
I've always believed my opinions are awesome.
I shouldn't have said it. I really regret saying it now. Anyway, let's move on before their egos get too large and go to the trading card game. TCG on deck now, and everyone has heard of Hooligans Jim and Cass, but I'm joined this week by Hooligans Mia and Kyle. How's it going, Mia?
Going really well, thank you for asking. I call dibs on Cass.
Ooh, how about you, Kyle?
Well, I guess that makes me Jim. Wonderful to be here, Jay.
Sounds so disappointed.
And it's always wonderful to be associated with the iconic Hooligans Jim and Cass. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad you guys accepted that so easily. I guess maybe you're giving me the benefit of the doubt because it's the final episode of this series. But we've got some fun stuff to talk about, so let's just jump straight into it, eh? So we want to talk about some favourite moments from the Players' Cup, from the Invitationals all the way through to the Grand Finals. So if you had to condense down for one memorable moment, what would your memorable moment be, Kyle?
I think for me, it has to be the moment from the Players' Cup Finals stream. One of the first matches that got shown on stream, what I will refer to as the whelp heard around the world.
Yes.
Matthew Burris got his Bronzong out against Dan Hugar and just kept clicking the done button over and over until Dan realized he could not win. Matthew finally typed whelp into the chat and, well, it took off from there.
Matt pressing the done button until the opponent realized that they were done. Yes, 100%. Bronzong, with its heatproof ability, just stamping out any embers of strategy when it comes to fire-type Pokemon play. I think everyone who watched that game understood the true meaning of whelp after that. How about you, Mia? What were you thinking?
My favorite moment was Austin versus Tamau in Losers Round 1. It wasn't a big flashy moment or anything, but it was a really cool heads-up play. So Austin running Eternatus VMAX against another Eternatus VMAX deck, he used Boss's Orders to go around his opponent's damaged Eternatus VMAX. He had the knockout set up, it was all ready to go, but he noticed that was his opponent's only Eternatus VMAX in play. If he knocked it out, then Eternal Zone would be disabled, and his opponent would be able to discard their bench down to 5, and that would remove all his Crobats if they chose correctly. This removes the main win condition that Austin was going for.
Mm.
So heads up play, you Boss's Orders around, you grab the Crobat first, and then you can go for the Eternatus later, or another Crobat if needed. So I just really liked that, just thinking a few turns in advance.
Yeah, for sure. And it shows the amount of flexibility that a card like Boss's Orders allows for play. It's not just a direct, hey, this is how I'm going to take prizes from you in this immediate moment, but it also allows you to set up multi-stage game plans to go out through the end. Really, really heads up play there. I think one of the key memorable moments I had was in the game between Tord Retcliffe and Jack Miller in winner's semis. It was a really elaborate setup from Tord, where he managed to get Lapras V online in one turn, being able to scoop a Suicune and then communicate with it to get, or use Pokemon communication to be able to get Lapras V in, then use the Dene to be able to discard his hand, draw loads of cards, and then get up an Icy Dance to bring Lapras in and knock out Zacian V from Jack's side of the field. So really, really heavily tiered setup to be able to get that big knockup. It was a really great vision from him. All the things aligned really well. And then the next turn, from out of nowhere, just in a very much the same manner, Jack managed to get another Zacian V online, switch into it, get the big knockout with Brave Blade. Again, just back-to-back, really amazing out-of-nowhere plays just to show the backwards and forwards nature of some of these games that we've seen in the Players' Cup.
I like that you two had very intricate moments of very delicate gameplay, and mine was, he said Bronzong. Nice.
He said a funny word.
It takes all kinds, doesn't it, here? We take all different kinds of TCG play, and there has been some really great moments here. Instead of the specific moments from games, how about decks? Like, what was your favorite deck to watch in this tournament? Let's start with Mia this time.
My favorite deck to watch during this tournament was actually the Dragapult VMAX just throughout the entire event. I've mentioned this before, I like Dragapult, I like spread, but Dragapult kind of got pushed by the wayside by the time the finals rolled out. Eternatus is a big, mean bully. So I guess my runner-up would be Alex Piney's Galarian Obstagoon and Decidueye deck. I like rogue decks. I like anti-meta stuff. There's a little bit of spread in there. I just enjoyed watching it for the little that we could until, you know, Senescorch did its thing. That deck just absolutely, I don't want to say hard counters, but it was a bit of a letdown, but Alex Piney did his best and brought a really great deck and even chose the best energy.
Center Scorch can make life very, very difficult for Decidueye. And we've already discussed how that deck has a lot of things that it's trying to do and needs a lot of cards to make it work. So it'll be interesting to see if Alex will be able to refine that list going forward outside of the Players Cup and have another go at making Decidueye and Obstagoon work in a more controlled fashion in a wider sense of the metagame. How about you, Kyle? What deck were you most impressed by in this tournament?
Yeah, the one that stands out to me was one of the most unique decks we saw in the whole Players Cup run, which was Colin Maul's Inteleon VMAX Omastar deck.
Yeah.
A concept that Colin had been working on for a long time. He had actually used Stonejourner VMAX with Omastar in previous iterations, but when Inteleon VMAX came out, it seemed like a better partner, and it was certainly one of the most fascinating decks to watch on the stream. Unfortunately, he didn't make it all the way to the Players' Cup Finals, but he certainly left his mark on the entire event.
Yeah, it was definitely one of those stream games that got everyone talking, right? I think the casters themselves and all the players watching on Twitch were really, really excited to see this deck do some serious work in the online regional qualifier.
Yeah, and everyone loves Colin, so that helps.
Great deck, great player. Definitely something that we love to see in these kinds of tournaments. Guys, I'm going to be the most basic energy out of all of you and go for my favorite deck in this tournament, and we saw it a real lot, is Pikachu and Zekrom Tag Team GX. And I love just beatdown decks. I think that having aggressive, really explosive damage is so interesting. And for Pikachu and Zekrom Tag Team GX, you're playing against your own deck in terms of, you know, you want to get full blitz off as quickly as you can. How do I make this happen? And I find the intricacies of making sure that you can make it happen as quickly as possible really interesting to watch play out. I think the game between Marcus Raj and TJ Miller from the Oceania Online Regional Qualifier is really exemplary of that. In both games, both players had these flashes of inspiration, these electrifying turns that just ended up with crazy amounts of damage being dealt by Pikachu and Zekrom. And obviously, like, once you get rolling with the full blitz, you start to spread out damage across Pokemon, but also the energy everywhere. And the deck just, it came together so nicely. It's a shame that some of the key components of it have rotated out, but I think it's proven itself to be so, so strong in the time that everything was coming together for it.
Yeah, for as simple as that deck looked, it is one of the most exciting decks to watch, I think, just because it is so unpredictable. You can play three Electro Powers in a turn. You can play like Tag Switch, Energy Switch out of nowhere and get a big Tag Bolt GX off. It was fun to watch for sure.
I just love it. I just love the combination of Pikachu and Zekrom. Pikachu, so small, so cute. But you know it's where it's directing the damage from Zekrom. It's the mastermind behind the whole thing. Let's move away from decks now. And this is a very tough question, but if you had to pick one match that you thought was the greatest one that you watched in the Players' Cup, what do you think that would be? Let's go to Kyle this time.
Sure. For me, it was the Players Cup Finals. I think it was the winner's semis, somewhere around there. Eitor Gomez versus Matthew Burris. We saw the Australian players bringing that full metal wall deck, just all metal Pokemon. And we were starting to wonder when we were casting it, can anybody actually beat this deck? And we saw Eitor Gomez with this ADP Zacian deck actually take a game off of this full metal deck. And we're like, oh, it can lose. And the game he won was very bizarre. He ended up winning with Duraludon attacking with Power Beam. Ended up with a Mawile GX coming in at the end, where there was just a very strange circumstance where Matthew had a ton of basic Pokemon in his hand. And that Captivating Wink ability forced all the Pokemon down so that the Wily Bite could get the game-winning knockout. And then we were all excited to go into Game 3, and Eitor had all of his water energy prized, so was unable to use Ultra Creation GX, ended up losing. But it was a very exciting back-and-forth match. It was one of my favorites for sure.
Yeah, especially considering how unusual the game played out, right? I know that Jack mentioned in his interviews with us on the podcast that ADP Zacian is a difficult deck, especially if they have defensive items. Eitor proving that the different build that he was running for the standard ADP Zacian deck was a really difficult game for Matt to be able to play alongside. And obviously things could have been much more different if the energy wasn't prized in that third game. It would be really interesting to see how that would play out.
Yeah, it certainly looked like Eitor was in a winning position if he just had water energy in his deck. And there was even a moment where he took a knockout on Lucario and Melmetal GX, got three prize cards, and still didn't get a water energy. So Two of his last three prize cards were those water energy. So it was heartbreaking to watch.
Yeah, just must be so frustrating to be that player sitting there knowing that you've got a chance to be able to take this game, especially when you've already had to sacrifice your main way of taking extra prizes and getting extra damage on the field. Really interesting games. Guys, make sure you go back and watch it. Mia, what are you thinking about your favorite match from the Players' Cup?
So we touched on this a bit earlier, and Kyle kind of, I guess, sniped this for me, but that's okay. My favorite match was the Dan versus Matthew again with the Center Scorch, just because before the game, the chat was like, wow, Center Scorch is going to win. Why are they showing this? Like, there's no way this metal deck's going to win. There's, you know, Frying Pan is rotated. It's completely metal. It's a joke. Don't even want to watch it. And then the game actually comes up. A lot of people didn't know that Bronzong was in this deck before then. And you see Matthew open the Bronzor, and he gets a turn two Bronzong in both games and just, welp.
Exactly. Yeah, just the surprise factor for not just for Dan, but also for the players at home watching and the casters to see how this deck is going to play out. It was just so fun to watch. And obviously the creativity of that all-powerful Lucario Immortal Tag Team GX plus Zacian V deck from Jack and Matt just showed throughout the finals that it was a different way of thinking about the game, and that Bronzong really flipped all the different matchups that you can rely on fire type damage for.
Yeah, I just really enjoyed the hilarity of there's no way this deck's gonna win, and then it just auto wins essentially. It was just, I don't know, funny.
I was casting that match, and when we were looking at it, we were like, oh no, this is going to be a terrible match to stream. It's just an auto loss for one of the players, especially in that first game where Dan kind of wasn't getting the hint that the game was kind of over. And we were like, uh-oh, are we going to have to sit here for 30 turns as Dan finally decks out? But then we realized, okay, we can make this fun, right? It's an unusual circumstance where, sure, one player is locked out of the game by a single card, but we'll make it entertaining at least.
And entertaining it was.
Give you a chance to practice your stand-up comedy routines.
We had plenty of time.
Bit of open air time. So my match that I would like to pick for the favorite one that I saw in the Players Cup will go to the round 7 match between Will Jenkins and Brandon Jones. Pikachu and Zekrom Tag Team GX match going up against Galarian Obstagoon. And from discussing with yourself, Kyle, and with Mia, this match isn't something that you see too often. Galarian Obstagoon has taken a hit in terms of the amount of players that are playing it, especially in the Players' Cup. And to see it on stream and to see the intricacies of the positioning that Will had to go through to make sure that Obstruct wasn't online continually throughout that game was so interesting to watch. It was mesmerizing as a player who, when they see a deck like Pikachu and Zekrom, know where the damage is supposed to come and how this game is supposed to go. Just seeing the creativity and the flow charting that Will went through to be able to make sure that he still came out on top was exceptional.
Yeah, I think a lot of people look at the Galarian Obstagoon deck and think it's a very simple, straightforward deck where it's like, okay, yeah, you get out Obstagoon, you use Obstruct, and you hope that it's enough. The reality of the matchup, that particular matchup, is there's a lot of stuff going on where you need to play around Tag Bolt GX. So if you have an Obstagoon active and, you know, another Pokemon on your bench, you have to worry about your opponent playing Boss's Orders and knocking out both of them. There's Mew, which can be important to block the Tag Bolt GX. Then your opponent can play Boss's Orders and knock that out, so they get another prize card. And then even when you get your field down to just Galarian Obstagoon and no other bench Pokemon, so you don't have to worry about Boss's Orders, they have the Raichu and Alolan Raichu GX to paralyze Galarian Obstagoon and force them to find some way to remove the paralyze so that they can attack again. Because if they don't obstruct, then it can take damage again. So it's a very, very tricky matchup, and we saw both players play it very well.
Exactly, exactly. I was so impressed to see how that came out. And I think, obviously, we said that Pikachu and Zekrom Tag Team GX have been a little bit affected by the rotation, and
just a bit.
Obstagoon is maybe a lot. And Obstagoon, a deck that has been on the decline in recent months, but I think it was as a showing for these two decks in one of the highest caliber tournaments that we're going to see for a while. I thought that both players played exceptionally well with it. So those were some of our favorite moments from the Players Cup, and maybe we can take a chance to look a little bit beyond the Players Cup. And I'd love to pick your brains, Kyle and Mia, about what you'd be from the Players Cup and how things played out in the finals, what you are looking forward to trying in the standard format at the moment, and how you think the decks that were played in those finals will shape the metagame. Mia, do you have any thoughts about what you'd like to try at this point?
Oh goodness, there's so many things. There's Salamence VMAX, there's Mad Party, there's Butterfree VMAX, but I think I'll have to settle with the Inteleon and Frostmoth, something that, you know, Tord brought. It's cool, It's just, I don't know. I like Frostmoth. It reminds me of like an icy Volcarona. And I really like Volcarona. And so does Kay. You know, I'm excited to use it. It has some snipe damage. It has big front load. And it's just interesting. It has a lot of opportunity to grow and has a bit of diversity that I can put into the deck. And it doesn't all have to be water type because, you know, you can still tech in some other one energy attackers in there. Who knows?
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if you can make some stuff happen with that, especially with a little bit of the normal type Pokemon being able to receive water type energy and use that for attacks as well. It might be an interesting combination that you can make work from that. How about you, Kyle? Is there anything that has tickled your fancy coming out of the Players' Cup?
Between the Players' Cup and there's been some online events as well, the metagame has evolved rapidly. You know, over the past couple of weeks, we've seen that Full Metal deck. I think that's going to throw a wrench into the metagame. And we'll see how that goes. But I'm interested to see if that'll be a one-time, you know, a deck that was good for this specific tournament, but now that people know about it, will it be countered? Will it still be viable? But the deck that stands out to me that I want to try to refine a bit more is actually Eternatus VMAX. It jumps out at you, right? It's the headliner Pokemon of Sword and Shield, Darkness Ablaze, and it just has massive potential written all over it, does a ton of damage, has a ton of HP. But what's the right way to build it? I'm not sure that anyone's really found the answer to that quite yet. And is there a way to stop Zamazenta V, which has become a very, very common counter to that deck? We saw in the Players' Cup finals repeatedly, you know, players would just put up Zamazenta V and Eternatus decks would have no answer. So I'm very curious to see, can Eternatus decks rebound after this? Obviously, it's still a very strong, strong card, but how will players find a way to use it amidst all the Zamazenta out there?
I feel like you're kind of going down the antagonist storyline here, Kyle, because Zamazenta and Zacian are supposed to beat Eternatus. That is the storyline from Pokemon Sword and Shield, but you're flipping that script.
Yeah, I'm on Eternatus' side. Didn't do anything wrong.
Living up to your hooligan name there, I think. Okay, so trainers, we mentioned earlier in the intro that there is some really, really big news, and that is we're getting Players' Cup 2 coming later on this year, and obviously for the trading card game, that is a big deal. We'll be able to see how players will be able to adapt from what they've learned in the Players' Cup 1 and take it through and duke it out to see who will take the final championship for the Players' Cup 2. Really, really exciting time. And we've also been able to get a bit of info about how you can register for this event, so make sure that using the YouTube description boxes below, as well as on your podcast platforms, to go to the event hub for Players' Cup 2 to make sure you're following all the information. But a little bit for you here now, eligible players will need to log into the trading card game online between June 21st and September 21st after having secured a player ID on their Pokemon Trainer Club account. So make sure that you're doing that to be able to get into the Players' Cup too. Once you've done this, there will be 50 tournament keys distributed to your account on September 25th. And this will really help a lot of players play in those tournaments to gain rep.
Yeah, so these tournament keys, everyone's going to get 50 of them. And you use these to enter 8-player tournaments, kind of like in Players' Cup 1. We've refined the point process for these 8-player tournaments. First place is going to reward 5 rep, second place gets 3 rep, third and fourth place both get 1 rep, and fifth through eighth get 0. So you're incentivized to play through the whole tournaments, and the better you do, the more you're going to get. It's much more different in rewards winning more than just doing a ton of events, which hopefully will address a lot of the concerns regarding the eligibility to qualify for this. Additionally, we've kind of tuned up and refined the leaderboard, so hopefully it will reflect everything a bit more accurately.
Yeah, so this time around in the Players' Cup, as long as you follow the directions, you'll be able to get those tournament keys, which means you don't have to worry about tournament tickets anymore. That was one of the sticking points in the first go around, and now you just get the tournament keys. So as long as you follow the directions, log in during the appropriate time period, you'll be fine this time. You can participate, no problem. So the time period for playing in these tournament queues will be September 28th through October 26th. If you want to participate in the Players' Cup 2, You can participate in those tournaments using those tournament keys to try to build up your tournament rep. And after that, the top 256 from North America, Europe, and Latin America will move on to the regional qualifier event like we did in the first Players' Cup, and the top 128 from Oceania, just like the first run of this event as well. And then we'll head into November for the regional qualifiers, where it'll be a double elimination bracket. Top 16 will be decided on that first week. And then region finals will be on November 14th, where then we will go down to four players from each region, which is a difference from last time. But this time, Oceania will get the full four players. And watch out, they destroyed the Players' Cup even with three players last time. So we're making them even stronger this time. But yeah, it'll be very similar to the first run of the Players' Cup on the TCG end. Once we get past the initial qualification stages, then we'll get to the global finals. We have four from each region, and we'll have another double elimination bracket with 16 players. So the big change here is just the qualification system at the beginning. You get the tournament keys instead of having to use tournament tickets. There will be a specific tournament queue just for qualifying for the Players' Cup, so look forward to that.
Yeah, we're really excited that a tournament of this level will be brought again before the end of the year, and we really hope that more players are excited to be able to join in. And do make sure that you are checking the event hub to make sure that you're eligible and get access to those tournament keys and get playing in the Players Cup 2 for the trading card game. Kyle, Mia, thank you so much for all your help and wonderful opinions across the entirety of this series. It's been so much fun to talk to you about the Players Cup. Any last words before we leave the trading card game for good?
I just want to say thank you to you. Thank you to everyone else on this team. And thank you to all the listeners and players for giving us a great Players Cup 1 experience. And I hope to see everyone in Players Cup 2.
Yeah, I think this is a really exciting time. Obviously, we've had to adapt with everything that's going on in the world. But this is the first really official online tournament series. And there's going to be some hiccups here and there. But I'm thinking this will lead to some bigger and better things in the future. I know for a long time, fans and players have been hoping for more online events so they can play from home. We're on the way there. So thanks to everyone for letting me be on the first run of this podcast. And I always love to share my opinions on the Pokemon TCG. But I think we got a lot more stuff, great stuff, coming in the future.
For sure. Players Cup 2 will be incredibly exciting. And we can't wait over on this side. Okay, Kyle, Mia, some quick fire question of the week style questions that we've had from user submissions over the entirety of the podcast length. So the first one comes from at Jingingbird on Twitter. And the question is, what two Pokemon would you choose as a tag team GX card and why? Let's start with Kyle.
This one's tough. There's so many tag teams you would like to form. A lot of people might not know there's actually a restriction when forming a tag team. They have to share a type. So that makes it a little more difficult. So for me, the first thing I thought of was maybe we can use one of those Pokemon that never got a proper Mega Evolution in the TCG. And one that came to my mind was Mega Pinsir. So we could do Mega Pinsir and Scyther is what came to my mind. Love to see those two on the same card.
Yeah, that's a kickback to Kanto, isn't it?
Yeah, weird. We never do that.
Yeah, so unheard of. I can't believe it. How about you, Mia? What are you thinking?
Well, it's far removed from Kanto. But this is something I've thought about for a long time, way even before, you know, this question came into my ears. And it's Mismagius and Frostlass. I like both of these Pokemon. They're both ghost type. And they're both just, I don't know, lovely and spooky and cool. And Frostlass also has like the coolest Pokemon cry. Well, second coolest. Krikatoon's number one. I think these two Pokemon could have a really cool dynamic if they were made into, you know, a new card. They'd have a lot of cool opportunities because they've both done very diverse things in the past. So I'd be very excited for that.
Yeah, a lot of ghostly goings on there, I think, and lots of different ways that players could be able to play something like that. Very interesting. One other question that I've got for you, and this is submitted from at Tofu Coco. It would be, which Pokemon would you have at a tournament as a staff member? So who would help you make judgment calls, set up equipment, or manage crowds? Let's start with Mia.
I don't know, Arceus maybe? Like, what are you gonna do?
The ultimate judgment.
Exactly. Just judgment. That's in its ability. That's its whole role. It's just judge. Like, what are you gonna do? Fight it? Nah.
Mia, I honestly don't even know how I'd be able to play TCG next to Arceus. Like, it's just sitting there the entire time staring down at you with one eye. I think I'd be just way too much pressure.
Oh, pressure, that's Giratina's thing, isn't it?
I like where you're going with this. How about you, Kyle?
Well, before I answer, just want to say what an excellent Twitter handle that is. Tofu Coco, that's outstanding. The first thing that came to my mind was Ndidi. Just have a nice helper, you know? Gotta run those match slips down the aisle, you know? I just feel like Ndidi's got to be able to help out at TCG events, right?
You can get the both of them and get the best of both worlds. Obviously, Ndidi female seems a lot more kindly and would help out with things, whereas Ndidi male has a bit of judgment in the eyes. I think it would kind of be working as an underling to Arceus, just spreading out a little bit of the you will comply kind of energy. Okay, trainers at home, I think it's time for Pokken Tournament DX. We're here for character select in Pokken Tournament DX now, and I am joined once again by Brendan Hansen. How's it going, sir?
Going fantastically, Jay. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. Actually, I must admit something to you, Brendan. It's been tough this season. I feel like I've taken a fair few beatings from you as we've gone through this podcast, and I think it's time to get you another sparring partner. So let's bring in someone new. For the first time on the Play Pokemon podcast, we're going to bring on Evan Hashimoto. How's it going, Evan?
Hey, I am so pumped to be here. I'm a huge fan of the show so far, and yeah, just everything about it. Thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you so much for coming. Obviously, for trainers at home, Evan is one of the commentators from Pokken Tournament DX and the Players Cup stream, so he is well and truly versed in everything to do with the Pokken Tournament DX metagame and community. And both of you, I'm so glad that you're here so we can talk about some of our favorite moments from the Players Cup, from the Invitationals all the way through to the Grand Finals. And I think where I'd like to start is by asking you both a difficult question. If you could think of one memorable moment that you think players at home should know about for the Players' Cup, what would that be? Let's start with Brendan first.
Oh, Jay, this one, it jumped out to me immediately. It's Alistair's perfect block during the Invitational in Losers against Toasty. He had this incredible perfect block playing as Mewtwo. Toasty was playing Sceptile, and he perfect blocks the first and second hit of homing, which allows him to go into burst, closing out the set. So it's just this like incredible application of high level tech, not once but twice, and then closing it in the grandest of stage. It'll forever be emblazoned in my mind.
Yeah. Obviously, like, these are the highest level of strategies that people can use in Pokken Tournament DX, and to see it come off in such a climactic way is always so interesting, and it made the stream really light up as well. So fantastic play there. How about you, Evan? What are you thinking?
For me, it has to be actually a moment during one of the regional qualifiers where we had a Decidueye player named Niet against Kira, who actually was one of our finalists, and Niet pulled off the most amazing duel phase I have ever seen. It was the very first duel phase of their final game. He managed to pull off this really ridiculous reset. It's like one of those things that you see in like a training video montage or like something where you're like, this is possible, but you didn't think you'd ever see it, and he pulled it off perfectly.
Yeah, one of those things where Kira just kind of puts the controller down and waits just to see when this is going to end, because once those combos get rolling, it's amazing to see a player really be able to commit and go all the way and connect every single hit that they need to. It's fantastic. My memorable moment, Evan, is actually kind of the inverse of yours. I'm thinking more towards the grand final stages, and I think I kind of can't choose between every single field phase that Shadowcat and Dewcomb played against each other. It's something that needs to be analyzed on a molecular level, really, just purely from the fact that both of these players were so cagey, and it just kind of showed the caliber of these two players who were coming at it from different approaches but understood how this game needs to be played at the highest level, and they really, really delivered on that.
Yeah, absolutely, Jay. It was so exciting because I think with what you're saying, Evan, going into Nia's match, we knew that we were going to see amazing optimal combos from Nia. And then, Jay, what you're saying, we knew going into those field phases they were going to be good. But I think in both cases, we didn't appreciate just how good they would be. Mm. Like, they really delivered. Also, scary note really quickly, Shadowcat today showed off that you can, this like tech with side Y on Darkrai, where you can place phantoms closer and further away. So still just in the practice in the lab, like expanding his Darkrai day after day, just right before we hopped on.
I thought that this was like he was already revealing his 9,000 level play with Darkrai, but it goes further, it goes higher. I didn't realize this was even possible.
yeah no it's unbelievable how much, I mean, one of the players that we've talked about so much is Jukem, who, you know, was a world champion. And Jukem and Shadowcat, of course, just standing, you know, in the finals on the very same level, very, very close to each other. And since Jukem was a world champion, he's improved so much. So it just goes to show you that, like, constantly, every single day, there's something new to learn about the game, and these players are taking advantage of it.
It's fantastic. And it's also amazing that the community is so collaborative in sharing these ideas and helping elevate different players and different playstyles. It's really, really interesting to see. Okay, I want to pivot away from these moments and talk about characters now, and which Pokemon really stood out to you. And let's start with Evan first. Which Pokemon character was your favorite to watch throughout this tournament? And I kind of think I know what answer you're going to give here.
Okay, so I know I keep not focusing in on the finals, but of course, I mean, everything throughout the entire Players' Cup was amazing to me. And the one character that I want to focus on is Blastoise. We saw two Blastoises. Oh yeah, make it rain. We saw two Blastoises in the Invitational with Mutator and with Slipping Bug, and then we saw James Abel from Australia in the regional qualifiers. And Blastoise, one of the characters that we see the least competitively by far. And we saw three top level Blastoises that all played super unique for an already unique character.
Yeah, and the stark differences in how these players approached the game plans here, Mutator having a very different approach to Slipping Bug, and we saw so many different things that we didn't really expect from Blastoise about the maneuverability of the Shell Fortress stance and being able to get in and out of Rapid Spin, being able to use the speed at which you can do that to be able to get better horizontal movement, better vertical movement. Just really, really interesting to see how an underdeveloped character was picked up by so many great players at the same time and showcased at the highest level.
Yeah, I love to see it. And I think that Blastoise is going to be a character that we see a lot more going forward.
It'll be really interesting to see how the Pokemon community rally around these different picks like Darkrai, like Blastoise, that we saw rise to prominence throughout the Players' Cup. How about you, Brendan? What are you thinking in terms of your favorite Pokemon character?
This question's so hard, Jay. I could say like seven characters right now.
You only get one.
Oh no, just I wanted one to like spout off three. Okay, I'm going with Lucario then. I'm gonna do it. There's a lot about Machamp that made me excited. There's a lot about Darkrai that made me excited, but seeing Dedeelite's Lucario, almost like a Pokemon out of time. You know, Dedeelite qualified, got top three at Worlds in 2016. He's one of the oldest, most established North American players. We hadn't seen him for a long time. And Lucario kind of went into hibernation in North America and the rest of the world as a character in Pokken. And this summer, he really woke back up, and I think that makes me excited because he's so good. That he's so exciting to watch, and he's so powerful, and it just makes me excited for the future. And just seeing someone who gets to express themselves with Lucario, how Dedeelite did, it made me excited about the game in ways I hadn't been for a long time.
Watching Lucario is an exciting experience, purely for the fact that it is a character you don't see as often coming out in tournaments, and it does have such a unique way of dealing with everything. It can do everything that it needs to do, but it really focuses its strategy around Synergy Burst. And the longer that the game lasts and the more opportunities you have to be able to get your Synergy attacks off, Lucario becomes this awesome late game win condition where you've got so much power behind you and you can just overwhelm the opponent. It's so fun, so interesting. I was going down the Lucario route. You kind of sniped me a little bit on that, Brendan, but I can pivot around because I've got an answer, and I'm going to take what you said before as well, and it's going to be Machamp. Personally, when I started playing Pokken for the first time, I naturally gravitated to Machamp. I love beat down characters and beat down strategies, and I'm not going to say that I'm a good Machamp by far. I'm passable at best, let's say. And so having Wingtide come in that Invitational and just show how dominant Machamp can be and how oppressive, forcing characters to play in different play styles, Machamp just gives Machamp so many opportunities to capitalize. And with the amount of damage that you do, the character just becomes disgustingly strong. And as a person who already gravitated towards that kind of play, it was so gratifying for me just to watch Machamp swing and throw its way through those Invitational games.
Yeah, absolutely. Machamp's just a character that we all knew was powerful, but just we hadn't gotten to see a lot of Machamp until Wingtide came out of the scene. So seeing him perform the way he did. You know, he took almost a year break from Pokken, so then coming back to the Invitational and just frankly kind of mopping the floor with everyone was so exciting.
Yeah, a few seismic tosses going off there. And yeah, Machamp just really showing that when it's in the right hands, it can be a top tier threat. Absolutely amazing stuff coming out from Wingtide and Machamp. Okay, another, all these questions are going to be tough. I don't know why I'm trying to make it interesting and new, but they're all going to be hard. So this time I'm thinking, what is your favorite match from the entirety of the Players' Cup? Brendan, I'm throwing you under the bus here. What do you think?
Okay, so it's within the saga of Dedeelite Jukum. They played three times this summer during the Players' Cup. Dedeelite won twice and Jukum won the time that it mattered. So I think the set that I'm going to pick, though, is the second time they played, the Empoleon versus Lucario match in winner's side of the finals. It was just such an explosive set, and I love that it was Jukum going to the Empoleon that he lost with during the qualifiers, but still made it to qualify, sort of had it his shot, and basically Dedeelite was like, no, I win this matchup. I can beat your Empoleon time after time. Go down to losers, get in line, try again.
Exactly. And that game played out so beautifully. It was so awesome to watch these two players go at it. And obviously, we know how it ended up. But for Empoleon to come out and be shown at such a high level and to do things that we didn't think Empoleon could do was so, so interesting to watch.
Every Lucario player plays that matchup differently, and Jukum is a player who feels very comfortable in that matchup as Lucario, against Lucario as Empoleon, I should say. So I thought it was really cool to see a Lucario player who we hadn't seen so long in Dedeelite sort of come out and say, oh, maybe have a different way to approach this than players like Toasty or some of the other Lucarios you've been playing. And I have something to say about the viability of Empoleon in this matchup, or if it's an even matchup, or if Empoleon wins the matchup. So I think that was cool, just watching the meta sort of shift before our eyes in these little ways this summer was really fun.
All these interesting interactions that we saw on stream playing out are amazing. Go back and watch as many as you can, trainers. They are fantastic. Evan, how about you? What was your favorite match from the Players' Cup?
Ooh, I think I have to go with another Jukum match, actually. But this time, it is Jukum against Wingtide. I feel like we're talking about the same few players, but for a good reason, right? These players are all so entertaining to watch and so good. But Jukum versus Wingtide. So they played in the Invitational, where Wingtide defeated Jukum. But the one for me is the second time they played in the very first round of the finals, where both of them went down to the wire, right? To the very, very final game. But we got to, like, see right before our eyes what we were actually talking about earlier, which is the fact that Jukum and all these top players, they constantly are learning new things, they're adapting, they're changing their play style, they're advancing in the meta, and we saw that just literally right before our eyes, where Jukum decided to go for more of these dual phase resets and changed up his strategy a little bit, used some different moves a little bit more, including like the low strong, which is actually the move that won him the game, and he managed to pull it off in the end. And I just love being able to see, again, I mean, so many people would become a world champion and then be like, yeah, I've pretty much done what I've wanted to do with this game. But to become a world champion and then to constantly just continue to advance as if you've, you know, never won anything almost is it's so admirable to me.
Yeah, the growth potential that Jukum showed throughout the entirety of this tournament bracket was amazing. And as you mentioned, Evan, the storyline began all the way back in the Invitational, and Wingtide, a player that we've discussed, is phenomenal and had a lot of pressure going into the final stages of the Players' Cup. And to see this game happen in round one, it felt like a finals already, like a grand finals or something. And just knowing that these players needed to get that footing in the tournament to be able to make their run more comfortable and also stake a claim to be like, no, I'm here to win this. It's just phenomenal to see that happen so early in the bracket.
I mean, Jukum also is a player who plays very much from the heart, which is basically something that Shadowcat said in his winner interview on the actual final stream. And so being able to do something like defeat the person who defeated you in the last, you know, major bracket that you were in the first round is a huge statement that really helps a player like that more than, the average player.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I'm going to move away from Jukum for my match, even though it would be very easy to pick a Jukum match because they are very entertaining. My favorite is from the finals. It's Shadowcat versus Fabulous. And I think this game is, it kind of feels like Pokken Tournament DX encapsulated for me. The aggression and the play style that Fabi used with his Pikachu Libre just really
putting so much pressure onto Shadowcat, taking those first two games, taking an early match point effectively, and Shadowcat taking the time to really understand the tempo at which Fabulous wants to play, making those adjustments, running it all the way back and taking it three games in direct fashion and knocking Fabulous down to losers. It was such a climactic battle to have in the middle of the bracket and really set the pace for Shadowcat's confidence to take him through all the way through to grand finals in winners. I thought it was just amazing.
I'm so glad you brought that up, Jay, because I feel like by the end of the bracket, all of us sort of felt like Shadowcat winning was maybe an inevitability. He was playing so perfectly. So remembering that Shadowcat started the tournament down two games against Fabulous, and then basically he counterpicks support, just he's like filtering through supports, trying to find an answer to Fabi's game plan, finds it, reverse 3-0s, and then that's what gives him the momentum. It's just so exciting. And then Fabulous too. Fabulous ended up having this amazing run after that moment where he sort of crestfallenly, he did so well, and then getting reverse 3-0, that's talking about a heart-based player, that's a gut punch. You feel horrible after something like that.
Just showing that even these top players, when they come up against each other in climactic battles and get knocked down to losers, it does take a lot of grit. It takes a lot of determination to keep going from that point. And we saw it time and time again with some of our players making deep runs in that losers bracket. And it's so much fun as a spectator at home to see these players give their all time and time again and make something amazing come from it. This is the beauty of something like Pokken Tournament DX and the Players' Cup.
Yeah, it's always so great to see. I mean, Pokken in general is a game, I think, that you play a lot with a lot of yourself, which I feel like something with Brendan would say and probably has said in the past before, but you really get to express yourself, not just in a like play style way, but also just in your actual like general attitude and how you, just choose to do things. And so you really get to see a lot of how players deal with something like these tough losses or how they deal with, learning to adapt in situations that are maybe not the easiest. And it shines through so clearly, which is one of the things that makes it such a beautiful game.
Admirable stuff coming out from all of our players across the Pokken Tournament DX brackets. But thank you both so much for talking about the Players' Cup itself. Let's talk a little bit about what happens after this. So obviously, the tournament is over. We have crowned our first ever Players' Cup champion for Pokken Tournament DX, and that's Shadowcat. From watching everything, from casting it, from understanding the community, what do you think are some of the biggest things that the community and new players might want to take on board from the Players' Cup specifically? How about Evan, you take us through this one.
Let's see. Just to hone in on one specific thing, I'd really like to see in the future, after the Players' Cup, what happens in the European scene in particular, because they had a lot of upsets. One of the biggest ones is, of course, Wingtide and Fabulous, known as the two best players in Europe, actually played out a tournament match for the first time in a major tournament in a very long time, and Fabulous taking it, which is a huge surprise to a lot of people. So there's kind of been a paradigm shift as far as who are the top players there. Plus, I think Europe may have more kind of like up-and-coming younger players than any other scene, and they are incredibly promising. Like, a lot of them already better than the full veterans of the game, and are just constantly improving also. So I'm just curious to see kind of where Europe goes from there.
There's lots of amazing players that are coming out of the woodwork, and I think the Players' Cup highlights that. It's so easy to be able to register and play, and now that these games have completed, I think a lot of people are going to be hungry to get back into the lab and practice and try different things and battle online against their friends and other members of the community, or just practice their stuff that they figured out from watching the Players' Cup. I'm so excited to see where things go from here. How about you, Brendan? What are you thinking in terms of key takeaways from the Players' Cup?
I mean, what you were saying, Evan, it speaks to me so much, and it's so true. And there's so many people coming to the game with sort of fresh perspective, which is really exciting. And I think one of those sort of fresh perspectives, it's something that she's worked on for a long time, but for me was Kira's Latios. It's emblematic of someone who is willing to see a tool that I would say everyone else, for the most part, sort of outside of other European players like G-Knight, sort of saw as like, this isn't quite good enough. It doesn't really do enough. You can only call it once. And she really put on an exhibition for why it's good. Then we saw players like Shadowcat filter through five supports. Jukum, for the first time in, I don't know, it's not true, but I'm going to say it, for the first time in his life, just like counterpicking support Pokemon. He never does it. Snivy Lapras, like he picks that before he picks what clothes he's putting on for the day. and we saw him do it twice. He did it against Dedeelight at the start of it and against Shadowcat. So for me, you're talking paradigm shifts, Evan. That's like a massive paradigm shift. It was, we have these players who for so long have said, I have my one optimal tool that works with my character. It's what I'm going to use. And now we're getting to this point where people are, they're willing to explore. And I think also, you know, Pokken's hard. It's a hard game to play at the highest level. It's easy to get into, but mastering it takes time. And I think if we're being honest, a lot of top players are getting to the point where they've mastered a lot of the things they want to master and they're looking for new frontiers.
Yeah.
And part of me wonders if like the skill shot supports like Latios or Yvelta, stuff like that, is going to be that next frontier, which sounds silly because it's like so fundamental, but that's the paradox of Pokken.
Lots of different shifting little things that you might not think about when you go watching the stream. Also, Brendan Hansen, the hard-hitting journalist there, we obviously fact-check everything on this show. So he knows about when the support picks are coming out from Dukem. But no, you're absolutely right, Brendan. Like, there are so many different ways to develop in Pokken Tournament DX, and it's not always just about the combos you can pull off and the way that you can be optimal in certain scenarios. There are lots of things that happen before the game even boots up, and you've got to think about where you're placing your pressure and where you're how you're supporting your character with cheer skills and all these different aspects of the game. And to see players still developing that at this stage is just so, so curious.
It hides its complexity really well, you know, and that's something that I love about the game is it is so approachable, but it's sort of like that you walk into a field and you don't know how deep it is until you get to the end, right? If the grass is so high, you can only see before you. You just keep going, and some people are going to turn back, but players like Shadowcat and Jukum, they're just headed for the sky, and there's who knows? People keep saying that this game is like reaching the end, that people have mastered everything about it, and every summer we find ourselves in a position like this after Worlds of the Players Cup, and it's like, how much deeper can we go?
Yeah, I have to say, Brendan several times has called it, what have you called this summer? You've titled it officially.
Oh, the Summer of Latios?
Yes, yes. Multiple times he's called that, he's officially dubbed it the Summer of Latios.
Let's get the t-shirts printed now, eh? Thank you so much, Brendan. Thank you so much, Evan, for talking through the Players Cup and beyond with us. But we're not done just yet. We've got a couple of rapid-fire Question of the Week-style questions, which have been submitted from our users online, so I'd love to fire them your way. Obviously, they're going to be tricky. They're always tricky. Let's start off with one from William Cleverly on YouTube. So, which Pokemon would you bring into the real world as a companion? Let's start with Evan.
Hoopa. I mean, that's such an... I mean, being able to teleport between places, I mean, that one's an easy one for me.
I was unsure if you were going to be like just making a noise about thinking it, but no, it just came out as Hoopa. You had it immediately ready. Were you surprised?
Yeah, I thought about it.
What are you thinking, Brendan?
I was thinking Suicune just because I would love, I don't know. Suicune has been my companion in Pokken for so long. Crystal's one of my favorite games. I just want to hang with Suicune in real life. I think we could go on some nice runs, but I want to know how you had the Hoopa answer so ready, Evan.
Honestly, I've just thought about it before. I think this is a question that a lot of people have thought about before, you know? Like, if there was one Pokemon that you could have with you in real life. But you see, now you've made my answer feel cheap, because yours is like, it's been my partner Pokemon, it's my favorite Pokemon, and mine is like, oh, I just want to be able to, like, teleport places. Like, that, now I feel bad.
Don't feel bad. Everyone has different ways of approaching this question, and if you just want to teleport places, that's fine by us. No shade. Next question. This comes from @WormsEye on Twitter, and it would be, which sport would you play in the Pokemon world, and what Pokemon would you choose to team up with? Brendan, it's your turn.
Basketball and Onix.
Whoa. Okay, that was very rapid fire. Why Onix?
You play offense and defense at the same time.
Are you going to be just running up Onix and then dunking immediately?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
That's so cheap. I love it. I love it so much. How about you, Evan? Let's go.
Would it be cheating if I chose Hoopa again and chose maybe basketball or golf or anything where that would allow me to automatically win?
I'm thinking we need to get a one-on-one basketball game between Onix, Hoopa, Brendan, and Evan here. Like, well, I guess it's 2-on-2 at that point. It would be 2-on-2 because someone needs to do some dunking. This is the only way to decide which of these two answers is better, really, I think.
Well, I just want to know, how can Onix hold a basketball
very daintily in its mouth?
That would be very skillful, but you know what, I believe it's possible. I believe in Onix.
Oh wow, you're letting Onix take the win. I can't believe this. Hooper will be so disappointed in you.
No. I just believe that it can hold a basketball.
You guys have really helped us encapsulate the spirit of madness that these Question of the Week style questions cover for us. So thank you so much. Once again, Brendan, Evan, it's been a delight to talk to you about Pokken Tournament DX. And that's going to be it for our coverage of the Players' Cup. We'll just take a moment to go through the final messages from the Play Pokemon podcast. Okay, trainers at home, a few final notes to close out our final show. So, If you would like to get involved with the Play Pokemon podcast, let us know what you thought about our first series or just any thoughts about the Players Cup. Please use the hashtag Play Pokemon Podcast. We love to hear your thoughts and feelings, and we're really interested to know if you thought this podcast helped you understand the Players Cup, or if the games allowed you to get into competitive Pokemon a bit more easily. Let us know using that hashtag. Obviously, we are a podcast, which means you can find us in most places where podcasts can be found, the most popular ones being Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Make sure you're subscribed there, give us some ratings and reviews, and spread the love of competitive Pokemon to all the other trainers around the world. We are also a video cast, though, which means if you want to trade your headphones for our gorgeous faces, you can do that on the official Pokemon YouTube channel and the official Pokemon Twitch channel. Make sure to be subscribed in both places for more competitive Pokemon action later on this year. Also, if you want to make sure you're up to date with everything happening competitively, follow at Play Pokemon on Twitter, and also make sure you're following pokemon.com/play. They'll be up to date with everything new about competitive Pokemon across all three games, so make sure you're following along there. Once again, huge thank you to all of our ace trainers who appeared on the show throughout this season. It's been an absolute delight to have you with us and talk about competitive Pokemon. Lastly, trainers at home, for the final time, look after yourselves and remember, when it comes to Pokemon, we've got the play.